Now, a new study has found that 86% of teachers reported moderate to high levels of personal burnout, 85% reported moderate to high work-related burnout, 85% identified workload as a direct contributor to burnout. The Teachers' Occupational Wellbeing Research 2025 is where that detail was taken from. John Boyle is the INTO secretary, the union that represents many of the teachers that we're talking about, and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, John. Good to see you.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Anything in this survey from the DCU surprise you, John?
Not a bit, Greg. You know, we've been calling on the Department of Education in Ute to do an independent review of teacher workloads, because this phenomenon has really created havoc in schools over the last number of years. And I know that some media outlets this morning were, apportioning some of the blame to parents. We would lay the blame solely on the shoulders of the Department of Education in Ute, who just seem to know no respite in relation to what they're asking schools to do. Every societal ill, you know, we signed up to a public service pay deal a year and a half ago, and we had, I think, 13 actions for the education sector. And in the meantime, the department has added about another 30 actions. So, you know, schools and teachers want to see good teaching and learning, and there's no space for that to be happening. But the amount of pressure that's been lashed on to school leaders and teachers at the moment by the department.
Is this about their expectations, and that in and of itself with normal class sizes would be difficult, but it's exacerbated sometimes by larger class sizes? What I'm trying to get at is in an ideal world, if we had the perfect recommended amount of pupils per class, would this still be a problem for teachers? In other words, is this an issue separate to, say, class sizes or resources that's exacerbated by the problems in those areas?
No, they're all absolutely linked, and I'm glad you picked up on that, Greg. You know, there's a European conference now in Rome starting tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to be attending that on teacher workload and wellbeing. And Ireland has been identified as an outlier by the European research, in the sense that we have the highest class sizes in the primary sector in the EU. And as well as that, we don't actually have time built into our school year for teacher training, CPD, for reflection as a staff on some of these new initiatives. We teach 910 pupil contact hours in primary, which is one of the highest in the OECD. But in most other countries, at least 30 to 40 of that school year, those hours rather, would be set aside for, you know, teamwork, collaboration, people coming in to teach you about, for example, the revised curriculum that's been mooted for next year. We still don't know what supports the Department of Education is going to put in place for those. And when all those things come on top of the different initiatives that different ministers like to launch, and schools want to always do their best for their pupils, but it's just becoming unbearable, and the burden is huge. And we can see it with the lack of teachers in Ireland too, Greg. I think it's linked to that, because a lot of the younger teachers are realising that when they go abroad, they have the smaller class sizes, they have the time to collaborate with their colleagues, they have a potential promotional opportunity where they can become a leader of a department. We have very little of that here in Ireland. And it's a much more attractive proposition to go away for 5 or 6 years. And that's a huge loss to our children here in Ireland as well. So I'm glad that DCU has highlighted this in their research. I mean, those figures are startling. 86% of teachers having moderate to high levels of personal burnout. And most of them are blaming it on the workload coming from the department. So it's high time that this is highlighted. And I hope the new Minister Nocton listens carefully to our call this morning for an independent review. They did that in the north, Greg, last spring. We had industrial action in the north and on pay and workload. And one of the outcomes was that the minister, given he brought in an independent panel of three very, very accomplished individuals, some of them international experts, to review teacher workload in Northern Ireland. The report was published last Monday, a very detailed report. Our members there are very, very happy with the recommendations. So If it's good enough for the six counties, surely Minister Naughton can replicate that here in the 26.
I mean, I think all of us feel underpaid, or many of us feel underpaid. And if you work in a call centre, or if you work in this job I'm in, or you work in retail or in hospitality, you know, you do generally start to feel burnt out heading towards the weekend. That's why we look forward to our days off so much. And, you know, you have that annual leave, and that's why we look forward to that and try and recharge our batteries and what have you. And I'm asking a question, it's not an opinion. Is this not part, though, of working life, that you feel burnt out? Sometimes I feel like, listen, I just need a couple of days off work. So, you know, is this not sort of just across working life and just part of being an adult?
Look, it has to be acknowledged, you know, Greg, that teachers get longer time away from their schools than many other workers, because teachers tend to be in the summertime. They certainly have a choice of having a good long break to recharge the batteries in the summer. Not every teacher takes that choice due to pay being low and also a commitment to children with special educational needs where they do the July provision. But, you know, they do have good breaks. But the study that DCU carried out is about, you know, workplace stress and burnout. And we would be of the view that that's a fairly recent phenomenon in primary education. You know, when I started teaching, I had very large classes, and that certainly brought its own pressures. But we didn't have all these extraneous demands being made of us. Okay, sometimes by parents too, and we have there's a COVID, a historical thing there with COVID, that we give out all our teachers' emails, and some schools then continued with that process, which we certainly wouldn't be encouraging. But by and large, we would place the responsibility for this on the Department of Education. There's two things they can do. They can certainly phase the timing of the new initiatives and the changes and the reforms, and not expect that you're going to be doing multiple reforms concurrently. You have one reform, you focus on that piece of work, you get that done, you reflect on the successes of it, and then you move on, you do another one. And every time you get a new one, you drop something that you've been doing previously. And that's a good work practice in any workplace. And we'd certainly hope that our paymaster would take heed of this study, because it's quite startling. And if the teachers are going to continue to be burned out like this in Ireland, we're going to have a very, very serious problem with having a high quality education system. So there's lots of things the new minister can do. She's only in the office now a couple of weeks. She's promised to meet us now before Christmas, and we'll be bringing all this to her and more.
John, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. That's John Boyle, INTO General Secretary. Your views, maybe you are a teacher listening to us that doesn't ordinarily get to listen to us, but maybe your school was closed. Interested in your views, 07491 25000. I do want to point out, by the way, that I didn't bring in holidays, summer holidays, into that conversation. It was Mr. Boyle. Not that that's a no-no to talk about, but it wasn't I that said it. Aquila said, why is the Inishowen woman accused of being a drugs mule not being named? And why does the news item not say if she got bail or not? Very strange. Well, there's a lot strange about it. I don't know where that... I mean, obviously her name's not being released by the courts. It's not being withheld by us. But I haven't read too much into that case. But why is she standing trial in 2030? I've never heard that before, ever, that in 2025 a trial is fixed for 2030. I have no idea what's going on. My curiosity, the same as yours, was piqued or tweaked or whatever the phrase is, and I'll also be looking into that, because that part of it was more... I understand sometimes names are withheld for legal reasons. It's certainly not a media decision. I presume she's not going to be kept in jail for 5 years. I didn't hear, I was doing something else as the report was being read. But also, to know a trial's taking place in 5 years' time is, that also seems a little bit strange. Can you please mention last evening at Kilross Junction, a car heading to Convoy decided to pull out in front of a lorry heading to Stranorlar. A white BMW, disgraceful. That's why we have to be alert all of the time. Hi, how do I report a dangerous driving incident to Letterkenny Garda? I do have a dash cam recording. There's a couple of ways you can do it, and I'll check this out, or maybe one on the team can. You can, there is a website where you can upload that detail and information to. But ordinarily, call the guards and they'll advise you. But there is a portal there as well. I'll dig into that a little bit more and come back with you with an answer in relation to that. Hi, could you please announce that bingo in Hallamurra, Glencolumbkill tonight is cancelled due to Storm Bram? More than happy to do so. And we are, as a public service to you guys, though not officially according to the state, we are more than happy to get all this information out. So please make sure to use the biggest platform in the county to your benefit. And on that issue, Mulroy Woods bingo cancelled tonight. I know a lot of people look forward to that, but anyway, disappointment. Bingo in Burt is cancelled tonight as well. You get a text message. This is a scam that's going around. You get a text message from someone on your contact list. You get a text saying that they've changed phones and they need a code. You send the code and you get scammed. I used the link and three of my contacts got the text too. I went to the phone shop and they said they never to text on codes. Please never text on codes. That is a scam. I'm getting also this call from a British voice, probably AI, saying about a job and add me to your contacts. I don't know what that story is, but anyway. Obviously, some people fall for it. Where are we now? Okay, I've read that one. Last one just before a break here. Hi, Greg. My mum's 93 and will not take the flu jab or any of the COVID injections. She says you do not know what's in them. And she's very healthy, had all her movements and a brilliant mind. And says since COVID injections came out and people got them, that a lot of ones have taken illness a lot quicker. And has killed people, she believes, as well with the injections. So I won't be getting them either. You hear of lots of people that got COVID injections, says they won't get any more. And that's a fact. Thanks, Rose. I listen, fair, people make their own decisions. Thankfully, we live in that society now. My mother lived to 82 and smoked 40 majors a day. I'm not saying that's an advertisement for smoking, but you could, using that same logic, say, well, I'm just going to go back on the fags and smoke 40 major a day. So I was lucky that my mum lived that long as she did and relatively healthy. And it's great that your mum's into her 90s now and relatively healthy. These one-offs like your mum, my mum, don't necessarily prove the fact. We just are blessed to have them in our lives healthy for as long as possible. But there you go. OK, back with more after the break.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Fill your stocking this Christmas from all the great gift ideas at McGee's Chemist Letterkenny, sponsors of today's 9 till noon show. See McGee's.ie or like McGee's on Facebook for a chance to win some great prizes.
Come and enjoy the brand new menus at the Water's Edge Rathmullen. Now open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Treat yourself to the freshly prepared dishes made with the best local produce in our stunning waterfront setting. Booking advisable on 074-98-91352 or via the Water's Edge Hotel Rathmullen on Facebook.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. And we're not talking about Christmas. We're talking about ordering your 261 at iMotors. The most loved Nissan offer is back. 4K your way. Right now, get 4,000 euro off a brand new Nissan. Use it as a finance contribution or a trade-in booster. From the ever-popular Qashqai, with comfort, tech and reliability, to the sporty Juke, the head-turning electric Ariya, and the spacious X-Trail, we have the perfect car for you. Plus, the new Micra and new Leaf are on the way and landing in the new year. Visit iMotors Letterkenny or Malin today.
This Christmas, wear the magic of the Donegal Crest. Try the new Donegal Hydra range. Tees, polos and fleece tops. Perfect gifts for every Donegal supporter this festive season. Brian McCormick Sports. In-store or online at bmcsports.ie. Kitting at Donegal since 1995.
Put your money where your heart is this Christmas with a Strabane gift card. It's the perfect way to support local businesses and can be used in 80 plus businesses, making it the perfect gift this Christmas. So love local today. Buy the Strabane gift card at O'Neill's Sportswear online at www.lovestrabane.com or load your own card at Supervalue Strabane.
TFI Local Link operates evening and weekend services throughout rural Ireland to help you stay connected 7 days a week. We know life doesn't just happen 9 to 5, so if you're commuting, shopping, visiting family, or going out in the evenings or on the weekends, let TFI Local Link take you there. Visit transportforireland.ie.
Highland Radio Time Checks brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is?
It is 11:18. Welcome back to the programme. Cliona Mahoney is the National Fostering Recruitment Manager and joins us now. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
And we do get involved in these types of information campaigns, and it's quite regular. And the hope being that you catch one or two people each time, you know, that's why we do it. It might sound like a familiar message to those involved in it or not interested in it, but the idea is that we just catch people's imaginations, and it's the right thing for them at the right time. So talk to us about the purpose of this information evening about fostering, and I suppose about fostering in the need generally, maybe, Cliona.
Sure. Well, maybe I'll just start off by kind of explaining Tuzla Fostering and just where I'm coming from. So with Tuzla Fostering, we're the only state provider of foster care in the country, and we are the largest community of foster carers. We're over 3,700 foster carers open their homes to over 5,000 children who are in care. So there is an ongoing demand for fostering and for foster carers to help children, to provide that integral support system in every community across Ireland. So we're really looking for foster carers to come and talk to us if they've been thinking about it, or if they would be thinking about it, or maybe they're interested, so that we can kind of help them to understand maybe what some of the opportunities might be. Because our doors are really open to foster carers from all walks of life, you know, all different age bands, over 25, and there's no age limit. So we're really looking for as many foster carers as possible to support children and young people, because they do really offer that opportunity to help children and young people try to make sense of the world in a warm, safe, stable home while they can't be with their family of origin or with their birth children.
Yeah, and you can be working full-time, part-time, you can be a couple, you can be single, you can have your own children, you might be childless. There's no real, there's no blocks in that space, really.
No, and there's lots of misconceptions, I think, out there about who can become a foster carer. What we would say is there's no typical foster carer. We have foster carers from all different walks of life, different backgrounds, different communities, different religions. And so you can, as you said yourself, you can be married, you can be cohabiting, you can be single. None of those things are factors that would be a barrier for us. It's really about looking towards how you might be able to support a child or a young person and their needs, and being able to provide that safe, stable, warm home if you can offer it. And we know that it can feel like a daunting task, that it can feel like a big commitment. And we're really trying to give people an opportunity with this information session and with other information sessions that we provide sometimes in person and sometimes online as well, to help people break down what some of those elements are of fostering. So we have lots of different types of foster care that might be suitable to lots of different needs. So sometimes people like to try respite fostering just to kind of try it out. And that would be short-term fostering, might be once a month that you might be able to have a child or a young person in your home. And that once a month might be regular visits. So you might see them once a month for a few months, or it might even be shorter. But it does give people that opportunity to test it out. And, you know, we have other opportunities there as well. Emergency fostering, that might be where there might be an acute crisis where we just need some short term care so we can figure out the needs of the child or the young person. And then everything else up to long term fostering, which is where you might have your have the child or young person until they're 18 and when they reach that. But I think the important thing maybe for your listeners, if they are thinking about it, that we do have lots of information on our website.
Yeah, okay, I'll just give
www.1800226771 as well too.
Okay.
Get more information.
All right, just that we had a little bit of a lag there. Some people then, because I'm trying to get people along to this online information event about fostering in Donegal. It's on Wednesday, the 10th of December at 7 p.m. It's not about money, right? But it's about support. So I presume there are supports there, because you're talking about taking another person into your home. You know, if it was a very young child, they have their needs that must be met. And if it's an older child as well. So what level of support is there for people if they do become a foster parent or parents?
Sure. So with Tusla fostering, we really try to make sure that both the child and the foster carer have lots of supports around them for lots of different reasons. So while there is an allowance for foster carers, depending on the age of the child, that can range between 400 and 425 weekly. We also provide other emotional supports for the foster carers. We have peer support workers as well, which are experienced foster carers, which particularly help new foster carers coming into the system. And that can be a nice way for foster carers to learn from other people and to see how their experience was, and to get that additional sense of how they might make sense of fostering as well. There's always a link worker that's aligned with the foster carer as well. So we always try to make sure that there is a social worker who is available to provide those individual supports to the foster carers. And then there's the 24/7 support as well, just to make sure that you're not on your own. There's always a phone number that you can call if you need any additional support or you have any queries or questions on it too. So we do try to make sure that there is holistic support around the foster carer as well as the child.
You've already answered this. Can I foster as a single parent? No, well, yes. Actually, we talked of single. We didn't talk single parents, but that's a yes. Is there an upper age limit? I won't mention this person's age, but they're a little older. Well, they're 74. They've put their age in the text. Is there, generally speaking, obviously taking into consideration, you know, their own needs and their health or what have you, is there, generally speaking, an upper age limit to fostering?
There's no upper age limit to fostering. We do recommend that foster carers are over the age of 25, but no upper age limit. And really, it's about, as you've said there, Greg, that ability to be able to take care of the child that would be in their care. And so we'd be looking at lots of different core components of what that would look like. And every child comes with their own needs, and it's important that we can really arrange that matching process so we can discuss with the foster carer what might be suitable for you with your current circumstances, with your living arrangements, with your health, etc. And then for the child as well, looking at what their needs are and really trying to promote that matching between both of them as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, that process is much about, you know, checking on the needs of the potential foster or the foster parent. Is there a hard and fast rule? A number of callers actually asking, does the foster child have to have their own room?
So we would recommend, and it is certainly preferred, that a child would have their own room, but it's not absolutely necessary. But it does depend on the age of the child, and it depends on the needs of the child as well, again. So they're all the factors that we would look at. And so at the information session tomorrow evening, we would break down some of those ideas that people might have in terms of some of those myths, maybe that come out. But really for us, the main thing is that we are meeting the needs of the child within that. So there's some considerations around different ages and who can share and who can't share, etc. But they're all things that we can talk about with individual people, either through the free phone line or through the information session if they wanted to ask some questions.
And the need is so great that you never know what peg can fit into which hole either, I suppose, as well. A caller wants to know if they're thinking about fostering, right? And I'm trying to paraphrase this. They're wondering what type of interaction might they have to have with the birth parents, you know, in terms of are they likely to be from another town or what might need to be facilitated. Again, I can think in my head of where it's going to apply differently in different cases.
Absolutely. And this, again, will be down to the needs of the child, what the relationship is. And sometimes there are access visits, and sometimes we have foster carers and birth parents who have very close relationships, and sometimes not so much. So again, that would really depend on the circumstances. But we are always looking towards how we can support the birth parents as well. So it is an important component for some children to keep that connection and to ensure that they have that that liaison and that access with the birth parents also. So it, as you've said, Greg, it really does depend.
Yeah.
But certainly there is access within that that we would try to promote, particularly around
Generally
the reading
speaking, would you
information.
try and keep the child in their own community?
We certainly do try to do that, and it is another misconception that maybe some people have ruled themselves out for various reasons, thinking that, well, that's only for cities, that's only for urban life, and we're really trying to get that message out there that we are looking for foster carers from all different types of communities, rural and urban, so that we can keep children and young people in their local communities, in their local schools, their local clubs. If they're part of GAA or they're part of another sports club, we want them to be able to continue that regularity as much as possible for consistency, because a lot of other things might be changing in their life, and to help them make sense of that or to have something that is consistent in their lives, that is really important to us. So all geographical regions, all different spreads, all walks of life, we're really inviting people, come and talk to us. Again, on the free phone line, or come to the information session tomorrow evening, and you can register for that online at our
And I'm going to
fostering.fr.
recap that just as the final word. So if anyone wants to grab a pen now, is fostering only provided through Tusla? Because a caller says, as a foster mother in Donegal, are there any supports for foster parents like me? You talked of, you know, this network in the Tusla sort of in environment. I presume that listener probably isn't in that ecosystem, the Tusla ecosystem, or they would know first off where the supports were, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I can't really comment on any other agency that might provide other supports.
But there are others.
For parents,
okay.
We do have those supports available in Tusla Fostering.
Right, okay. So just because it's not perfectly clear to me, is this exclusively online, this information event tomorrow night?
Yes, so this is an online information event, and we do try to host these at least once a month so that we can give people an opportunity to tap in at different times. Sometimes people might like to attend the information sessions a couple of times before they make up their mind or before they formally register their interest. So this one is solely online. Now, we do have on the fostering.ie website, we do have sometimes information sessions that are in person. So we have teams across the country who are out and about doing outreach at different festivals, stands, different events that are always promoting the need for foster carers and that demand. And that information is also available on our website if you look at in-person information sessions. But this one tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. is online, and registration is necessary through the website to be able to get the link for that.
Yeah, and 1-800-226-771 is the free phone number there. And there's also an email address, tuslafostering@tusla.ie. But the easiest way to register for that event tomorrow evening and just have a listen is through foster.ie, the website, right?
That's great.
Listen, yeah. Cleena, thanks for joining us. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks a lot,
bye,
Greg.
Bye. Look
Take
after
care.
Yourself. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Right, we'll be back with more after the break. Michaela O'Leary, sales manager at Too Good To Go Ireland. It is Michaela, or is it Michaela? Michaela?
Michaela is perfect to you. Thank you
Lovely
so much for
stuff.
Having me on.
Is it common where you're from that there's different ways of pronouncing that? Up here, there's two or three different ways.
There is.
Okay.
I've gotten, I think, every variation under the sun.
Right. Well, Michaela is what we're going to call you, as that's your name. Right. So Too Good To Go. Talk to me about it.
Absolutely. So Too Good To Go is a social impact company. We try and reduce food waste, and we do that by connecting kind of locals in Ireland with local food businesses who have food left over at the end of the day. And they sell it on for a really good price on our app. So we're all about reducing food waste and giving great deals to consumers, I suppose.
Do we have any idea as to sort of how much waste has been prevented through this initiative? How long has it been established now?
Absolutely. So globally, Too Good To Go has been operating for about 10 years, and we've saved about 500 million meals. Across the world, we save 4 meals every second, which I think is a lovely stat. In Ireland, we've been operating for just over 4 years now. We're very lucky. We work with over 3,000 amazing businesses in Ireland, and we've saved just over 2 million meals Which is a lot of food to be saving from going in the bin.
For sure. Now, obviously, too, we have to talk in the context of what we do, right? So that's business, presumably, and us trying to limit food waste through that relationship that you broker. But we as a nation are very wasteful within our own four walls, aren't we?
We are. In Ireland, this always astounds me. In Ireland alone, we waste 2 million kgs of food every single day.
Oh, my word.
You know, for a country so rooted in farming and with such a high quality of produce, it's kind of shocking to think that we throw out that much every single day. And we know from research from the EPA that it costs the average household around €700 per year, Hugh, which is a lot of money to be throwing out in today's climate.
And a lot of it is unnecessary. It's often stuff, I'd imagine, with a relatively short, you know, lifespan.
Look, it can happen for a variety of reasons. You know, I think it's so common these days to kind of over-purchase, maybe not have checked your fridge or your cupboards before you do your weekly shop. All of a sudden, you've got extra salad leaves, you've got extra bread, whatever it may be. And then life is so busy at the end of the week, you check your cupboards. I always say you've got like a bag of sad salad in the background. And unfortunately, you do have to bin it. And I think, you know, what we're really focused on at the moment is, I suppose, making people aware of the waste that can happen across the Christmas period. We did a survey recently and almost 80% of Irish consumers said that they wasted food over Christmas, which is a real shame.
Mm. And what are the most common things that are wasted? Because, you know, you could imagine with this sort of message that's put out there, you know, the turkey and the turkey curry and the turkey sandwiches and this go lasting right until middle of March. But that's really not the full story, is it? We do waste a lot of stuff.
You're exactly right. I actually think we're very good with reusing the meats, and I suppose we portion it and buy it correctly. But the highest waste levels are actually bread, at about 48% of consumers saying they waste bread, and in and around 42% on vegetables. And I think the most important thing there is there's loads that you can do to reuse and recycle, I suppose, bread and vegetables, and give them kind of a day two or a day three revival. So I think that's definitely something consumers should be aware of and should be mindful of over the Christmas period.
Yeah, and it can be simple stuff, isn't it? You can make a nice soup. It's easy done, isn't it? Breadcrumbs is an option for your out-of-date bread, but there's other stuff you can do with bread too. It's a case of just Googling out. There's tons of information out there.
Well, that's it. And like my mom always, when she bought bread when I was younger, would put it straight into the freezer and kind of take it out as she needed it. And I think, you know, over Christmas, we all have the mindset of, I don't want to be left wanting. Mm. I don't want to have to go out to the shop on Christmas Eve. I do it myself. I can totally understand it. But it's about using then your freezer smartly to make sure you're reducing your food waste.
But that's really important, because I thought, in a way, you know, if you know how you can get maybe a deal on meat or whatever and freezing it, that's fine, but you have to have a plan. And it took me a while to get into a routine that you take that mince out, you stick it in the fridge and let it, you know, defrost it, you know, if you're going to cook it that night, or chicken breast or something along those lines. So it's not just a case of jamming it in the freezer and thinking it's job done. You do have to sort of figure out what comes next.
You do. And look, I always feel a bit boring when I give people advice on how to reduce their food waste, because it's about focusing on it. It's about writing your shopping list. It's about planning what you're going to eat ahead, which is like, it's not normal or natural for everyone, but that is meaningfully how you can reduce your food waste. And you're exactly right. If something's in the freezer, you have to know when you want to take it out and use it.
The game changer for me was because, say, for instance, you got the meat in a plastic package, you know, or you got it in a white bag if it's from the butchers, and it goes in there and it just stays there often. What I've started doing is vacuum sealing it. So vacuum sealing it flat.
Very good.
So it's attractive, right? So mince, if it's a kilogram, split it up, flatten it out, vacuum seal. You can get them for 25 quid in your local middle aisle retailer, right? But also writing how long was left on it when I put in. And it just reassures me that when I reach for it, that I didn't freeze it 30 seconds before midnight. You know, it's for my own reassurance, because see, I do something and I think it's great on Monday and then I forget why I did it on Thursday.
Yeah. And even something that made a big difference for me is, you know, let's say I had like a load of chili left over. I might be tempted to put that all into the freezer in one block. But now I like portion it out into one meal servings. Mm. So I'm kind of pulling it out and not defrosting.
But do you do it in Tupperware?
I actually do it in the kind of reusable plastic bag.
That's the job.
I kind of flatten it.
Yeah. I think you take
it looks
that
like
out,
a very organized fridge.
Exactly. You take that out otherwise in a big red ball, right? And you go, what am I going to do with that, man? And also, it takes too long to defrost. It's like the world in reverse, freezing in the middle and then soft on the outside. If you flatten it, it defrosts much quicker. It's more accessible.
Evenly.
And it feels. It feels less like that you just chucked it in the bowl. You know, three chicken breasts in a white bag, you put them in the freezer and they come out in a white round ball of chicken. It's not attractive, right?
Not great.
So you flatten them out and they look like lovely fresh chicken breasts. Simple things, and it saves us money. Our waste is massive.
Really so. And look, another thing I love to do is genuinely to use Too Good To Go. Like, we've got great partners in Donegal. We work with all of the O'Hare's bakeries. If you're looking to reduce food waste, you can get amazing desserts for one of your Christmas dinners or your lunches via Too Good To Go. Groceries from Aldi. Like, there's so many options there. So I would encourage anyone.
And what does it work? Do you get like a surprise box or bag or what? Or can you order the individual items? What way does it work?
So essentially what happens is when you open the app, you'll see all the profiles of local businesses in your area. And on the profile, it will give some indication of what might be included, bearing in mind that it is called a surprise bag and you're not going to know exactly what you're going
to get. Well, this could be so overwhelmed in admin that it would never get off the ground.
Well, that's exactly it. And look, for like, if you're going to O'Hare's bakery, you're going to get cakes or pastries.
You're not getting a bag of minced meat. Let's be, you know,
what's
going on. You're going
but if you go to one of our butcher partners, for example, you will get some type of meat. And then partners like Aldi or Eurospar, all operating in Donegal, it's much broader. It's a grocery surprise bag, anything really. Meats, fish, poultry, dairy. It could really be anything.
What kind of discounts
nice
do you sort of hope for, or is there an actual sort of a figure, Michaela?
So you'll see on the profile the original price and then the Too Good To Go price. Mm. And it's usually around a third of the full value, which is an amazing deal. You know, when grocery prices are rising by 6%, 7% this year, I think anything that can help us bring down that food shop cost is a massive win.
All right, OK, well, people can check it out and also take on that advice. Thank you very much indeed, Michaela O'Leary, Sales Manager at Too Good To Go Ireland. Right, I'm joined on the programme by Angie Russell, who's a ADPI spokesperson, because humanitarian amnesty demonstration is to be held outside Leinster House tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. until 3 p.m. It's to mark International Human Rights Day. Angie, thank you for your time.
Hi there.
Nice of you to join us. Okay, so talk to me about the point one is getting across at this tomorrow.
So we've decided to make a demonstration tomorrow because, ironically enough, tomorrow is Human Rights Day, and it is also the birthday of direct provision. So this inhumane system, it was created on the 10th of December, 1999. So it's the 26th birthday. And we are looking to make a demonstration to reclaim that day and ask for dignity.
Because there has been longstanding government commitments to get rid of direct provision, yet here we are.
Yeah. So according to the white paper that was introduced in 2021, there was promises of abolishing direct provision, but unfortunately we haven't seen anything with regard to those promises.
There's been a shift in the narrative whereby there was a time where voices like yours were, you know, maybe more heard. And those that are very sort of anti-immigration or what have you were smaller in number. Now we have Minister Jim O'Callaghan, you know, himself calling out certain things, what many with a certain point of view would have said they've been saying for years. It's not a balanced, it's never been a balanced conversation. It seems to be that, you know, the dissenting voice was very, very quiet. But now there doesn't seem a great deal of space for voices like yours, Angie, to talk about human beings and their plight and what responsibility we might have to them.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we are in an anti-immigrant climate at the moment. And my voice, and along with the 1,500 ADPI members' voices that we are asking for amnesty for, it's very difficult to get on platforms like this and, you know, share our stories, because we have lived experience and we know what it's like to actually be inside here. And, you know, we've been people and many years. So we're hoping that by continuing with our demonstration, continuing with platforms like yourself and stuff, we might have a chance of this.
There's around 1,500 long-term asylum seekers, isn't there? There's more people living in direct provision because there are those that have been given leave to stay. I'm not sure, leave to stay. I'm not sure if that 1,500 captures them as well. But are you calling, am I reading it correctly, that you're calling for a blanket humanitarian permission to stay for those that are remaining, or for the process of their applications to be sped up? What is the ADPI or you yourself, Angie, calling for?
So we are not asking for a blanket amnesty. Unfortunately, with the last amnesty, there was... you know, a few mistakes, I would say, that were made, and there are a lot of people that are still in direct provision. Whereas all of our ADPI members that had received amnesty, they have moved out. So this one, we are only asking for 1,500 members. This is only for people who have been here and are willing to move out within 6 months of receiving that amnesty. So it's a bit more regulated than the first one, and we'd like to refer to it as a pilot project. It's something that's small, it can be measured, it can be monitored, and if this works, we could try it again.
Yeah, and some of the people we are talking about, if not many of them, they live and work here. Your children may well go to school with their children. They may even share some of your concerns about immigration policy, ironically. You know, We have a habit of pigeonholing or putting people into categories, and in many cases that can be a misplaced adventure.
Yeah, definitely. We have received an enormous amount of support and respect from the community, and, you know, political support. We've had some massive influx for that this past week, and we are so, so grateful for that, because we try and shift the narrative now, showing that we don't want to take, we want to contribute, and unfortunately we've been forced to rely on state due to all of these immigration laws. We want something different. We've been here for long enough, and I feel like we deserve it at this point to live without being questioned for existing, if you understand what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, and I really think on all issues we really need to get to a point in society where we have on many different things a balanced discussion, rather than a time whereby someone who might not agree with you, Angie, felt that they couldn't speak out publicly. And I do get feel we're getting to the point where someone like you, even though some might disagree with you, you know, might be reluctant to speak out publicly because of the pylon that might come from. And I think just generally speaking on all issues, we need to get to a space whereby we can go back to having out in the open, balanced, respectful conversations. And therein, within those conversations, are the solutions. Not necessarily everything that you want or everything that someone else's want, but something that's fair to all. And we can only do that through conversation. This, of course, is a demonstration taking place outside Leinster House. You may wish to join it if you're down there, or maybe you are travelling down to it. It's running from 10:30 a.m. until 3 p.m. And whether you agree with it or not, thankfully, we live in a society where you can gather like that and express your views. Angie, unless there's anything to add, I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much. And if you'd like to come out and support tomorrow, we would be eternally grateful. It's always peaceful and, you know, we're going to have our kids there and everything. We're hoping to get something out of this tomorrow.
Okay. And have you struggled to get coverage elsewhere, Angie, if you don't mind me asking, from the nationals, you know, like, your News Talks, RTEs, the papers, etc.? I'm just curious if there's a change in the air, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, it is a little difficult to get into contact with everybody at the moment, especially because a lot of people like to run stories where they can just push narrative, instead of hearing directly from somebody, as I say, with lived experience. And we are not just media statistics kind of thing. If we actually sit down and have a conversation, you'll see that we are just generally normal human beings and come from terrible situations. But, you know,
I'm not sure any human beings are normal. The longer I go on in life, I don't care where you're from. Everyone you think's normal always turns out to be a bit cracked. But anyway, I do understand your the level of normal representation is equal. All right, listen, Angie, thanks very much indeed. Hope the weather's not too bad for you tomorrow. Look after yourself. All right. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you wish to get in touch. I have a comment here about someone who's got a bit of a dilemma coming up to Christmas, and I'm going to read it at the beginning of tomorrow's show, or towards the start of tomorrow's show, because it is quite an interesting one, and I'm very interested to get your views on it, so that's why I'm holding it off. Have the consent conversation, they should be for adults. Very difficult when you have an 8 or 10 year old asking what it means. Is it? Like, I would reframe that. I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but if an 8 or 10-year-old said to me, you know, what does consent mean, Daddy? And I would say that, you know, I'd break it down. It doesn't have to be talking about sex, right? But it could be about, you know, what someone wishes. You could talk about hugging. You know, it's just a case of asking, you know, asking if you're, can I give you a hug? I don't think it's not the space I live in where kids ask each other if they want hugs. I've heard situations where grandparents are, I'm not getting into it now, it's too late in the show and I can't get my head straight. But there's loads of ways you can reframe that conversation that relates to an 8 and 10-year-old, whereby it's useful for them as they get older without having to going straight to the big issue. If that makes sense. Right, now the money keeps on rolling out here from Highland Radio. Coming up after 12 o'clock, John Bresson has got €1,000 to give away as part of our Cash and Car Christmas giveaway. It all culminates, of course, in that beautiful Renault, that Renault Symbios, worth over €35,000 given away on this show just before Christmas. We've got nine prizes of €1,000 to give away. So that's 10 draws in total. If you want to be in the draw today and the rest of all the draws, then please get in touch with us. I'll tell you, I'll break it down for you tomorrow if you're interested. See your Lotto plus three plus the bonus. I know the odds. This is better odds than winning £60. You can get in touch with us right now, 07491 25,000. We can get you a ticket to make sure you're in all 10 draws, or go onto our website, highlandradio.com. John Bresson giving away a cool €1,000 later on. But that is where we have to leave it on the programme today. Thank you very much for listening to the show. Thank you for watching the show. However you listened or watched, it's very much appreciated. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.